up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Welcome, everyone. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is back in the Rogues Gallery. Jason Hunt here, Kendall Sin here in the studio with me.
Hello, everybody.
And joining us from Ice Station Zero, parts unknown, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And from Fort Worth, Texas, our resident cosplayer, Mr. Penguin himself, Jeff Hackworth. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. And it's not dire weather, for once.
It's not completely ugly.
No. You're going to have to get right on that microphone. Kendall.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, every time.
I will make love to the microphone.
That's right. You got to love
it. It was raining here.
Is it raining in Fort Worth?
Yeah, it feels like the weather wizard is mad at us or something.
Oh, yes, that could be it. Now, we'll get to the weather wizard here in a minute because the Flash. We haven't had the real weather wizard yet.
No.
On the Flash. But we are going to talk about the Flash. He's coming. But I want to talk Constantine first. Constantine. As we discussed a little bit on Week in Review, and we posted an article over on our main site, Daniel Cerrone, the showrunner, has this very long set of posts on Twitter that basically spell out the scenario for Constantine. Is still on the bubble. We have our 13 episodes are done. And that ending, the reveal at the end, kind of changes everything. And everybody's like,
we know there's a cliffhanger ending.
Yes. Yeah. And everybody's like, what? Huh? What? And so now we want more episodes. Now, Matt Midovich over at TV Line has dug into the rumor that Constantine would move to Sci-Fi and become Hellblazer. He says there's nothing to that. That's just a rumor somebody started. There's no substance to it. Daniel Cerrone, posting on Twitter, says that NBC will make a decision in May after they've had a chance to review all of the pilots that they've ordered. So in the meantime, he's wanting people to stream the show in every possible legal way that's available. The last, I think, four or five episodes are available for free on NBC's website. And if you want to see any of the others, I think they're streaming on Hulu and Amazon Prime and other places where you'd have to pay for all of them. They said that's basically what's going to tip the bucket over one way or the other. And he said it's interesting that he said NBC loves the show. And he had Suits at his house, and they were watching with him the last episode, the 13th episode. He said they're on board. They like the show. And at some point, even, they stopped getting no smoking notes.
Yeah, I've noticed that it's even getting loose there.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that was one of the things where NBC was just saying, yeah, nobody's watching anyway, do whatever you want.
Well, I think that may be part of it, but Cerrone said maybe we wore them down.
Yeah.
He said eventually they just stopped giving that note.
Yeah.
It just dropped. And then there was no explanation to it or anything. It suddenly he just stopped seeing it in the notes that he kept getting from the network. But it's interesting Go ahead, Tim.
I think realistically, you end up with a certain amount of feedback you are getting from the people involved in the audience, and there is, you know, nothing is in a bubble anymore. The days of getting a letter writing campaign.
They're over.
What you have to do because you know that's the only way you can really communicate with the studio. Now they're following Twitter and they're following the internet and they were hearing from the beginning that a show about John Constantine is, you know, supposed to be a show about a guy who's drinking too much and smoking too much and saving the world, generally under protest. And as the show has progressed, it became a lot closer to the comic than it started off as.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that what this, it certainly may have been a case of them going, yeah, nobody's watching. Who cares? But it could also have been a little bit of them looking at it and going, you know, maybe if we actually are closer to the comic, people will tune in. And so, you know, as much as I don't want to ascribe common sense to a lot of studio heads, due to the, you know, significant amount of evidence that shows there isn't a lot of it, it's entirely possible they actually sat there and went, oh, well, you know, he's supposed to be a smoker, and seriously, do we really expect this guy to be, you know, kids to be going, I'm going to dress up in a trench coat and go fight demons?
Well, and I think there's something, too, that I think it was either Mark Guggenheim or Greg Berlanti talking about the stuff that they've been doing with Arrow and The Flash, especially with Arrow. And he says, as the show has progressed and as they've proven themselves with various different aspects of the DC Comics universe, they've been allowed to do more in terms of bringing other characters in, telling certain stories that in the beginning were off limits, you know, certain characters that they couldn't play with. Right now, so far, Gotham and Metropolis are still off the board, but they've allowed for the possibility that at some point, maybe they would be allowed to mention it. But see, it's a progression of things.
Yeah.
As they succeed with certain aspects of the show, then they're allowed to do other things. And that may be a little bit of what's factoring in with Constantine being able to smoke, is that the show, despite the fact that David S. Goyer is involved, the show has actually started to resemble the comic book even more faithfully than it started, like you said, Tim. And maybe the suits are sitting there saying, okay, we're gonna give you a little bit more rope. We're gonna give you a little bit more leeway, a little bit more of a cushion, and you've got a little bit more room to work, and it's only 13 episodes anyway, so let's see what you do with it. But I find it interesting that Cerrone has said that not only do the United States viewers matter and count in terms of dollars spent on streaming and if there's going to be a DVD set or whatever, but also overseas. He says the overseas numbers are really big and really significant in the decision that NBC would make to continue the show. And we know that Arrow is very popular overseas. And
I would think Constantine would lend itself very well to overseas.
Oh, I would think so. I would think so. Well, and I wonder how many other shows, you know, we talk about over on Level 117, we talk about the fact that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not cancelable, and Agent Carter may be the same way. What I wonder is how many of these shows are still on the air, not because of their popularity in the U.S., but because of their popularity overseas.
Well, I think they've come out, they've pretty basically come out and said, you know, that like S.H.I.E.L.D., I mean, they treat that like a commercial. You know, that's the commercial for their movies and stuff like that. And I would imagine that show's breaking even. And it just barely has to break even in order for it to be cost effective for them.
Yeah.
I am not real familiar with Agent Carter. I've watched part of an episode. I'm a little bit behind on it. But I don't know. I'm not familiar with the ratings there. You guys are probably more knowledgeable of that than I am. But I don't see that working as well with what DC is doing. You know, it's like ABC can do that simply because they're part of that big conglomerate.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, this is one of our, you know, Marvel. We have to keep everybody happy. And also, it's corporate synergy. You know, it's like this show has to feed into this. You don't have that at DC, where you have shows all over the place. You don't have a cohesive cinematic universe.
No, you don't. Although, you talk about corporate synergy, you consider the fact that the CW is owned by CBS and Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have The Flash, The Arrow, iZombie, Vixen, all on that network. Warner Brothers also owns TNT, which is where Titans is going to show up. And then, of course, CBS is going to have Supergirl. So there is Mark Pedowitz has already said there's a possibility of all of those shows crossing over at some point.
And with the exception of Geoff Johns saying something about a multiverse.
Right.
With the exception of that, there is no ties, though, to their cinematic universe, which this would all have to feed into.
Right.
And, I mean, we all know that I'm a fan of the multiverse, so, you know, I'm all for this, you know, crazy you know, Wally West and Barry Allen duking it out in a movie.
We're definitely going to get into the multiverse when we talk about Flash here in a minute.
Yeah.
Because that's
all over the map there.
Yeah. But did moving Constantine to an earlier hour help it or hurt it, do you think? Or did it make any difference?
Man, I don't know if it really made any difference on Friday night, because Friday night's just kind of a free-for-all. You know, as far as science fiction goes.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it's honestly just a...
I don't know that the hour change really matters. Me, personally, I want to see them get... I want to see the ratings be good enough to keep them there, keep them on the air, but bad enough to where they say, you know, just break even. just break even, and you can do whatever you want. Because there is room to get crazy in that universe, and I just so desperately want them to bring, you know, I so desperately want a Swamp Thing universe that it's that I just want it to get crazy. I want to see Dr. Fate on the screen, you know. It's like I want to see Zatanna, I want to see all these people, like I want to have Justice League Dark.
Well, and I still have somewhere in a drawer somewhere, I still have my pitch for a Zatanna series for CW. So, you know, I'm just waiting for the call. Right?
Well, I had a Blue Beetle pitch years ago.
Considering we're leading up to the Spectre anyway.
Yeah. I mean, they have really set that up.
And I think you know, there's we've seen Dr. Fate's helm. We've seen, you know, we're leading up to the Spectre. It's been a really interesting ride for this show, considering that it is in many ways fighting against the success of the comic and its influence on other television. Supernatural is basically it's massively influenced by the comic. A lot of the any supernatural show where you've got a difficult main character, you know, fighting, you know, legions of hell owes a lot to Hellblazer. And I think that it's kind of like, you know, fighting, you know, it's like going to see John Carter, and not being aware that you're looking at, you know, the guy who basically trod the ground for Superman and Star Wars.
Yeah.
To that point, though, you're also fighting against ignorance among the audience, people who don't know which one came first.
Yeah.
Because you've got so many people that are looking at Constantine as a ripoff of Castiel from some Supernatural when it was actually the other way around.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that unfortunately there's no real way to fight that in the general perception. The general audience isn't, there's no way to get that point across. There really isn't. Because you can sit there and say, but we were first. They're going to say, Supernatural's been on the air for this many years.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, they don't care about the comic book.
And that's pretty much in any show you do. Any space odyssey that's on TV is going to be compared to Star Trek. You know, it doesn't matter when it first arrived in the pop culture consensus. You know, I mean, it's, you know, there were lots of things about this before, you know, Star Trek, but Star Trek was on TV.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like...
But actually, in terms of space opera, there really wasn't a whole lot before Star Trek.
No.
I mean, you had 2001. Well, not even in the movies. You had 2001. You had Forbidden Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic Voyage, I guess, would be considered a science fiction, but it's not in space.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, really, you know, you had, you know, some B-movies and some schlock stuff, but you never really had any kind of serious, significant space opera like you had with Star Trek. So it kind of really was a forerunner in that sense.
It's kind of like how The Terminator is just a couple of Harlan Ellison episodes of Outer Limits strung together. You know, yeah. I mean, there's very few pure ideas out there. And that's what Constantine is fighting against, is the fact that how many issues did Hellblazer run?
Oh.
A lot.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah,
It's been around. It's been around. I mean, we're not exactly all spring chickens around here, and we all remember when Constantine you know, came about. And it's not like he was the first to battle supernatural entities.
Right.
You know, but as
he
far
was just
as
the first one to do it in,
while drinking
in
and
real
smoking.
Time,
yeah.
Drinking and smoking. And significantly, he was the one that aged in the comic books.
Yeah.
You know, everybody
aged
else.
In real time.
Yeah. Which was a pretty big deal. It still is, actually, because you still don't have a whole lot of characters that are getting older. How long did it take Dick Grayson to graduate
yeah.
college? Yeah, I mean, come on.
Well, yeah. I think that was the plus of having a line like Vertigo for DC, and
yeah.
that you weren't bound.
You weren't held to a certain sales. You weren't held to a certain sales number too. They could let it play.
Well, and I think too, if they bring the show back, and let's assume for a second that they do, one of the promos that they could do, if they felt the need for it, is to do one of these from the pages of Hellblazer and show the comic book and show the stuff that's been coming before, because you know odds are they're going to be pulling a lot of the storyline from the pages of the book. And, you know, because we've already seen that with Zed's story. You know, that's... Tim, how faithful have they been with her arc so far?
So far, relatively. The thing is that we haven't had the chance to dive into the religious order that she's running from in any kind of depth. They've teased us at it, and I think that if they get the second season and they are willing to go where that storyline goes in the comic, where basically she has been bred to be she's been bred to be Mary, and that her child is supposed to be their version of the Messiah, and it's a not a small organization. They're kind of a covert apocalyptic version of Christianity that is not very nice. And it could be a really powerful storyline to play with, and they've given us enough of it so far to show that they're at least willing to go, you know, to a certain degree. I don't think they're going to go with the kind of scale they had in the comic, but it also ends the resolution of that storyline, the way that the world is saved.
Spoilers,
you know, is. Yeah, spoilers. In the comic, you know, well, you need to have a virgin, right?
Right.
Don't you always?
The way to solve that problem is to not have her be a virgin anymore. and then there's John Constantine, who, you know. So.
And what are you talking about? He is a pillar of morality. You would never do something like that.
Exactly what he is. But I think, you know, that was the really wicked and funny thing about the comic is that John basically saves the world by being a bastard, which is, of course, is his nature. So, and you know, we've gotten enough of that. We've gotten enough of the hint of her backstory that they could run with that. And I think that it could be a very, very creepy several hours of television. But I also, you know,
could also be very funny.
Oh yeah,
it could be very funny.
It could be
the realization of like, there's one way out of this.
Yeah,
we can get this over with, or we can do the whole rose and candles bit. But one way or the other.
Oh yeah, and but the thing is, of course, they've already departed fairly significantly from the Rising Darkness storyline. Just in our final episode of the season,
yeah,
because the Rising Darkness would have actually been this whole season has been to some degree an adaptation, very very loosely, of the Southern Gothic, or American Gothic, run in Swamp Thing, where the Rising Darkness was something that Swamp Thing was dealing with, and John was popping up from time to time, being in a enigmatic and unpleasant, and sort of making Swamp Thing go to these various towns and encounter these various horrible aspects of America, which we've gotten to some degree. It's just it's been John and Chaz and Zevin. So it's been
so in the series. You know, then have, John has been in the Swamp Thing role, and Manny has been doing the same kind of thing that Constantine did in the comic. Then.
Not really. I mean, we're basically, everybody's been kind of, John is John, and John is Swamp Thing to some degree in this.
Okay.
Because he's one of my problems with the show is that John is a willing fighter against evil, as opposed to someone who is, initially, someone less gung ho about being the hero.
Well, now he has
this version
expressed...
of John is a little too. This version of John is a little too willing.
Although he has expressed reluctance, and he sat there and goes, "I do it because nobody else can. I'm just kind of resigned to my fate, so I might as well just do it." We have gotten a few of those comments.
It's a much more bitter, cynical. I mean, he's sending Swamp Thing in the comic. He's sending Swamp Thing on this journey because somebody has to do it, but he's not telling him anything.
Yeah.
And he's basically just, you know, oh, you need to go to this town because something's going to happen. And because Swamp Thing has ethics and morals, Swamp Thing goes. And then he gets upset because he has to go through something really terrible. And then John just sits there and goes, that's too bad. You got to go to this town next.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it's John reveals that he has been putting all these pieces together because somebody has to save the world, and he's figured out who needs to be in the right places because he's playing a game of chess with the world. But in like itself, when you get into once John is on his own in Hellblazer, you know, generally speaking, he's, you know, there's never this sense of I am a righteous warrior. I am the one who must fight against the evil. It's you rotten bastards, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Is much more the undercurrent of the comic.
Now, predictions real quick. Do you think it's going to get picked up?
You know what? Here's the thing. They're looking at, what, May?
May.
So they are past the period where, that's past pilot season, right?
Right, yeah. And everybody's got to hold through June.
Right. So, on one hand, that is probably a good thing for it coming back, because if they were really expecting to kill it...
they would have killed it by now.
Yeah. These are people who are not going to want to lock out those actors if they have any other use for them, out of being able to go on to a new show.
Right.
On top of that, you know, it has been getting a lot of Twitter activity. It's been getting a lot of overseas activity.
It's popular on social media.
A lot on H2O. The model is changing.
Right.
Yeah.
The idea that you have to have this, you know, everything, your TV numbers have to be this, and you sit there and go, okay, what's it? Doctor Who. In the UK, it averages 8 million, 9 million views. On the 7 day numbers for the show. What TV show on a network here would you consider a success on a network? Consider a success running 8 or 9 million audience?
Yeah, nowadays anymore, I mean, really the numbers are all over the place because you've got so many different ways of watching it.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Cerrone said, stream it between now and May so they get the numbers up.
And also, a lot of it could be, you know, I mean, I would think there, and I don't know how the time parameters work, and it's all about when they give it up, but it's, you know, it depends on when this hits Netflix, when this hits Amazon, you know, stuff like that, as far as, like, instant streaming.
Well, it's already on Amazon.
But it's not on there for free.
No, it's on Amazon,
you know,
Prime.
So you're going to pay, you know, $2-3 an episode. Most people don't do that simply because I have all this content for free.
Right.
Why would I pay for something? I mean, you look at, you know, something like Breaking Bad. Netflix saved Breaking Bad. You know, I mean, that show, everybody thinks it was this magical show and stuff, and it was an excellent show, but it struggled. If it wasn't on AMC, it would have never you know, made it very far, you know, but Netflix saved that show. It's how I discovered it. It's how millions of people discovered it.
You mentioned time.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned The Terminator.
Yes.
So we get into time travel when we talk about The Flash. See how, see what I did there?
Coming up next.
Coming up next. We're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about The Flash and Firestorm and time travel and all sorts of stuffs and things when the Rogues Gallery continues right after this. Stand by.
This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
We know you like the distinguished competition, so you probably also have an interest in the House of Ideas. We have a podcast for that, Level 117, where we talk Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. We also discuss the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe. We gather in the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters for recap, analysis, and discussion with a few digressions along the way. No matter what your security clearance, you will be able to listen to our show, Level 117, part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
We are vengeance. We are the night. We are Sci-Fi for Me.
Back on the Rogues Gallery, Jason Hunt here along with Kendall Sin, Jeff Hackworth, and Timothy Harvey. And now let's get into the Firestorm pilot. Because that's what it was.
That's what the last couple of episodes have been.
And it was very well done.
Yeah.
The special effects for Firestorm, I think, were just
really nice. I have to say, for CW, for first of all, for television standpoint, and also just for CW standpoint, the effects have been very good, very competent.
It was a very good nuclear explosion.
Yeah,
and I like the flash effects. I like the speed, the running effects.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait to see John Wesley Shipp doing that kind of running, that effect. he's Jay Garrick. He's Jay Garrick in disguise.
He's
the Flash.
I am not going to disagree with you on that.
Well, and now that we have officially introduced time travel, and we have Professor Martin Stein, who actually just happens to, oh, by the way, have some theories about time travel. How convenient was that? And we know now from the 3D hologram Cisco came up with that older Barry Allen, the Flash, was in the room at the time of his mother's death. A lot of people are sitting there groaning, oh, it's going to be Flashpoint. they're worried. There are people that are online, you know, the online reaction is mixed because there are some people that don't like Flashpoint because it led to New 52.
Yeah. Flashpoint was I was not actively reading.
You can do that part of Flashpoint, but you're not going to have the same resolution as Flashpoint.
That was
a universe-changing event. We don't have that universe. Yes. That universe doesn't exist. So
I wasn't really reading, or I wasn't reading at all, you know, during Flashpoint and stuff. Now I keep up with it, you know, online and stuff like that. I'll keep up with Wiki and everything's about Flashpoint. And from what I've gathered and from what I've read of Flashpoint, Flashpoint itself was... had some awesome stories in there. It really did. Now, me, I begrudge it because of the New 52.
Yeah. Well, and you know, reading the comics and watching the animated Flashpoint might be a little bit different because I didn't read them. I watched the cartoon movie.
I haven't watched it.
Pretty much all of Flashpoint, most of the tie-ins.
Yeah.
And then I watched the animated. And it stuck pretty true to it.
Really?
There were just minor changes here and there.
Well, I think the animated version was actually much less bloody.
Really?
The comic let itself go to the unfortunate
extremes
of what that world would be like.
Yeah. When you're ending a universe, you can get away with some blood.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the first movie that James Tucker was supervising producer on. And Tim and I have talked about this before. James Tucker has taken away my ability to watch these movies with my kid because that one we watched, and it's PG-13, and we watched it, and you know my kid's 12 at the time, and he looks at me afterwards. He goes, "You shouldn't have let me watch that." He said, "Because the violence in it and the just blood flying everywhere." was just so over the top, and I didn't like it. And I have not liked any of the DC animated pictures since, because they're not for general audiences anymore. I can't watch them with my kid. And two, I don't like the content. I don't like the way that these things are starting to be written. Suicide Squad, especially. I mean, there's a sex scene in the Suicide Squad animated movie.
Right.
Completely doesn't need to be there.
Yeah.
You know, it's
well, and I think that, again, you and I have talked about this too, is that the animated films are unlike the previous animated films, which were original stories for the most part. This is very much adaptations of New 52 stories.
Well, part
of the problem really comes into the fact that the New 52 stories are in many cases rehashes and in some and pale copies Justice League War, okay, where the Justice League comes together for the first time.
Right.
Well, there's 70 years of Justice League or Justice Society coming together for the first time, and quite frankly, this version of the story isn't any better than some of the ones we've had before.
No.
And so if you're going to tell that kind of story, tell a better one. Don't just tell one that's like, and then make it, an hour and a half fight scene.
I think a big problem that, as far as to get to your point, Jason, of the of content, a lot of I think that the way that they're approaching it is like, well, these people watching it are, grown because they've grown with us. A lot of people my age, stuff like that, watching these animated movies, and we're the ones that can spend money and stuff. But I think what they're missing is we don't necessarily want them to grow with us. Like, we are, hardened by life, mm-hmm. And stuff, and we have grown up through war, seen numerous wars, and we've seen all this violence and stuff. We watch these things, and we read these things. Like, when I read a comic book, I'm reading it because it makes me feel kind of like a kid again.
Yeah.
And I want to have that. Now, not all innocence, not all, everything is easy, but I do
want... It's the escape.
And also, as those of us who have grown up and become parents and stuff, we do want to pass this down to our children.
Yeah, and that's the biggest problem that I have with all of this is the fact that we can't.
Yeah,
We're no longer able, and really, especially in terms of DC... We're not getting any titles now. We might now with the new set that's coming out in June, because there's going to be a 6-issue Batmite, and there's going to be a couple of others. But for the longest, all through the New 52, there has not been any content, anything generated from them that would be appropriate for kids.
There's not one Batman comic that I've seen that I can hand to my kid.
No.
Well, the new Batgirl, from what I hear. You could probably do that with, and it looks like some of the stuff that they've got coming out. I think that one of the big missteps of the New 52, and we are turning it into a New 52 bash, no matter how much we try and avoid that thing, it just keeps coming back. Is that it really was a complete step away from what an entire generation of fans was wanting, really. I think there was just, it was a way of, it was many people felt that it was a slap in the face because of how it completely ignored the continuity that an entire at least a generation, if not two, had grown up on. What we run into with this big change they've got coming.
And we don't know what that change is. We don't really know.
We have a list of titles.
Yeah.
It sounds real positive, and a lot of it sounds
But we don't know really what they're doing. My concern is that they're just literally doing this convergence thing just to for 2 months, make old fans happy, and then they're going to go back to status quo.
Well, it's not necessarily going to be status quo because it's not going to be New 52.
Well,
it's going to be
the same continuity
of the new stuff.
I just hope that they...
And then newer stuff.
I would love to see them just have a completely separate line. Like, I would like to see the new 52 continuity and then the old, you know, continuity. But that's going to get so confusing. And, you know, you were talking about, Tim, you know, with the Batgirl, like, it was going to be more age-appropriate, you know, for younger kids and stuff like that. Well, the problem there is it's part of this grand universe. And that to me, is why I got into comics in the first place and the reason why I still keep an eye on comics. You know, I'm, you know, here, I'm four score, you know. But it's one of those things where I like the universe. I like how everything ties in together. And that's, I mean, and you have old fuddy-duddies like me who don't like the New 52 simply because they got rid of all this old.
Right.
I mean, when I went to the comic shop the other day, I was like, man, there's a lot of, like, this Earth 2 is not the right Earth 2.
No.
You know, this is not a different Earth. You know, I was like, if you're going to have a multiverse, you know, at least, you know, give me something. Give me something of the...
Yeah, they used the Thomas Wayne character from Flashpoint in the Earth 2.
Yeah, he's the Batman.
Which is crazy.
Well,
you know,
I think so many things that they just completely failed to grasp on every level of New 52. All power to them having good sales numbers, which they say they do, or whatever. But, you know, and of course, excuse me, we're the generation that went through Crisis on Infinite Earths. We know, we went through the period where the entire universe got changed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people who hated that. And there were people who loved it, and I was one of the ones who was quite happy with it.
Man, the world
time,
before social media.
Like they and, you know, they alienated fans, they alienated creators.
Yeah.
When are you going to see George Perez over at DC again?
Never. According to him,
never. Well,
exactly.
Now let me bring it back over into our conversation about Flash, because we are expanding the universe. In that story continuity, because the Flash, the Arrow, Vixen, all of those are tied together. Excuse me. And of course, we've got the backdoor pilot for Firestorm.
Yeah.
Which was very, very well done. And now, you have this this question: what happens to all of those other stories? Now, granted, Vixen and Firestorm haven't started yet. There's still a possibility we could get an Atom series spinning out of Arrow as well.
That's been the scuttlebutt.
What happens to Arrow after we have time travel in the Flash? Because that you have to consider that impact, because if the Flash, if Barry goes back and changes things, then it changes everything. Or how much does it change in Oliver Queen's universe, because they're related, and you know there are you know ripple effects that you'd have to consider. You know, what would change, what would stay the same if Barry goes back and saves his mother? But see, then if he saves his mother, then he never becomes the Flash. You know, it's one of these it's you know
paradox.
Grandfather paradox, mm-hmm. where you know, is he going back to save his mother? Or at some point, does he realize he has to go back in order to make sure she dies, in order for him to be there to, you know, you wrap your head around time travel, and it's just, ah.
Yeah.
Then they don't know who killed Sarah.
It's
because in the team-up episode, they ran the DNA tests on the arrows that killed Sarah.
Right, but we've since...
The only reason that they knew that Oliver was a match for the DNA.
Yeah, but we've since gone past that point where we've actually revealed that. Jav, are you caught up on Arrow? Because I'm about to do some spoilers.
Okay. Yeah, I know that Thea.
Okay, so Thea, we've had the reveal that Thea actually now knows, because we got that in the last episode. So pretty much the only secret on Arrow right now is the identity of the Arrow. And I'm pretty sure that Detective Lance probably knows, but hasn't admitted that he knows, because we know everybody else.
Saying if Barry went back in time and he didn't become the Flash, then it probably would have taken longer to find out who actually killed Sarah.
Oh, well,
here's the thing. It doesn't, the impact on Arrow is going to be minimal. Because in the comic book universe, you have Superman flying off to save the universe, and he's off the planet. And you go and pick up Green Arrow, and you have Ollie zipping around Star City and fighting mobsters. Or you've got Green Lantern, who's zipping off into the universe. You know, you can. There are different types of story, and they're different. I mean, they can cross over because comic book crossovers are the greatest thing ever invented.
Right.
But they don't have to. I mean, I don't think it's going to impact. You might get a more interesting and varied class of villain, which means a different story to tell because all of a sudden you're fighting a real superpowered villain. But other than that, I don't think you're going to see that big of a change.
Well, and two, you've got the decision now that the annual Flash Arrow crossover is a thing.
Yeah.
So he's still going to be the Flash, sort of. I don't know. I see all sorts of potential problems down the road if they decide to go ahead and do this. I mean, they're going ahead and diving into this whole time travel thing. But if they don't do it right, then all of the goodwill they've built up this season, because this season has been very, very well received.
Oh yeah,
the numbers are great. It's one of the best rated shows on CW right now. For lack of a better word, a juggernaut compared to everything else on the network.
Yeah,
and it's a significant show for them. And if it goes off the rails, I don't know how well it's going to be received in the next season. Well, unless season two is all time travel and fixing things and breaking things and more time travel to fix and break things.
Which hopefully it's not, it is one of those jump the shark things where they could. It depends on how they handle it.
Yeah.
So, I'm just not worried about it.
I'm not either. I've got goodwill in the
really
show.
Not.
I feel good about the team that's running Flash, but isn't he leaving to do...
Well, he's going to do Supergirl, but I don't think he's leaving.
He's still involved.
Yeah, he's going to be involved in all of them now.
Yeah.
But now let's turn our attention to Firestorm, because like Arrow did for Flash, Flash is now doing for Firestorm, and I think Arrow is going to do for the Atom.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, Tim, you talk about a model changing. It seems like this is now the CW superhero show model where you get a popular series, you get it up and running, and it's successful, and you use that one to launch the next one.
Yeah.
And that seems to be working pretty well, because this two-part Firestorm story was really well done. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed with it.
And, they've also spent almost the entire season setting it up.
Yeah.
It's not like it was frivolous. It's not like it just...
Oh, by the way...
It's just a very special episode of The Flash.
Yeah.
They've been building up Ronnie Raymond for a long time.
Well, and when we first got the word that Robbie Amell had been cast as Ronnie Raymond, everybody sat there and went, they're going to do Firestorm.
Yeah.
Because that's the automatic assumption that you bring to it. And then they announced Victor Garber was going to be Stein, and then they announced Jason Rush. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. How can you have Jason Rush and Stein and Ronnie? Hold it. Which combination of Firestorm are we going to get? And now we know, of course, we've got the original Ronnie and Stein. And I would have to think they've got to figure out some way of duplicating or getting close to the effect that you saw in the comic books where you have,
the head.
Ghost Stein.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, you got Victor Garber doing voiceover work, and it's just a waste of his talent. You need to see him. But other than that, I think they've got it pretty close.
But talk about a cost-saving measure.
Yeah.
Talk about an opportunity to basically keep your production costs down by going, okay, six episodes of the season, you're just going to be a voice, and six episodes of the season, we're going to see you.
I just don't know that an actor of Garber's caliber and experience would go for that. unless he's really, really, really excited
free up,
to do it.
Would free up half of his schedule to work on something else?
Look, well, every actor I know is totally cool with going into a sound booth and doing lines.
Well, and
getting paid for it.
And how many actors have sat there and said that the reason they got involved in a superhero show was because their kids or their grandkids or somebody is sitting there going, "You've got to do this."
Yeah, exactly.
Or we'll hate you forever. You know, so you can't pass this up.
Do you have any idea how much my daughter wants me to write for My Little Pony? You have no idea. I mean, it was just like, damn. Like, as soon as she realized that I work in an industry where something like that is not out of the realm of possibility,
mm-hmm.
she's just like, that's a real thing. Like, people, humans write that. This isn't written by Pony. This isn't real. As soon as she realized it wasn't real, then she realized,
my kid all the time is doing, you know, stop motion Lego Justice League stuff. He's not doing Lego City.
Right.
He's not doing, let's draw pictures of the firefighters, putting out the flames. He's doing superhero stuff or he's doing Doctor Who. And that imagination spark that's there, and especially, you're right, with people like us who are in that
business,
creative business, that idea that we know how to do this kind of thing. They're more likely to sit there and go, James keeps coming to me, "Hey, let's do this fan film, and let's do this fan film, let's do this stop motion." Okay, that's great. You've got this whole list. What's your story? Bring me the story, and we'll talk about it.
And how are you going to pay for it?
Yeah.
Because your school is not free.
No. Okay, when we get back, we will talk about Arrow and Aquaman. Because we've got a new picture.
We do.
We've got a new phrase. This whole Unite the Seven thing is causing some internet chatter. So we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about the reveals and the secrets and the things left to go over on Arrow when the Rogues Gallery continues right after this.
This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hi, folks. My name is Timothy Hardy, and I am one of the co-hosts of H2O, the weekly show about everything genre that I host with Mr. Jason Hunt. And we talk about pretty much anything you need to hear about, or want to hear about, or didn't know you needed to hear about in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, horror, science fiction, all these great things that we cover every week. And it is just a opportunity for you to tune in and listen to some really, really fun stuff. H2O, sci-fi4me.com. We'd love to have you listen.
We have 52 reasons to listen to this podcast, but they may change in 6 months. Now back to the Rogues Gallery on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back on the Rogues Gallery, and let's talk about Arrow, because we're toward the end of the season. We're building up toward the season finale, and I made the prediction that now that Thea knows she killed Sarah, now that Thea knows that she's been manipulated by Malcolm Merlyn, the last pieces are in place for her to take her mask as Speedy. And I'm making the prediction that by the time we get to the season finale, she will be wearing a mask and will officially be part of Team Arrow. I think that's what this whole thing has been building up to, and I'm really surprised that nobody has punched Malcolm Merlyn in the face yet. Because, really, I mean, there's pieces of the storyline that you sit there and you go, What? Why hasn't anybody shot this guy yet? You know? I mean, he keeps bringing Ra's al Ghul up as the boogeyman. You don't know. He's going to kill us. Well, okay. That's all well and good, but you're manipulating everybody. I mean, he's manipulated Oliver. He's manipulated Thea. He's killed how many people with the whole undertaking thing? It's not like we've got a whole lot of motivation to help keep you alive. You know, why in the world would Oliver and Thea agree to work with Malcolm to defeat Ra's when all I got to do is just turn Malcolm over to Ra's? And it looks like that's what's going to happen in the next episode.
Well, I think that if they are not building to the point where someone finally looks at him and goes, Yes, thank you for your help. Now, since about those, you know, hundreds of people that you're responsible for the death of, we're going to have, you know, address that. You have to. I mean, you can't, you know, there's a moral grayness to some of this show that they have embraced because, you know, Ollie kills.
Yeah.
Except he hasn't lately.
Except they've been dealing with that. They've been dealing with the fact that, you know, he's decided he's not going to kill. So you have, you know, that all of these decisions have fallout, and one of the things the show has done, which I have been pleasantly, you know, happy with, is that it has actually dealt with some of that stuff. It's addressed some of the fact that, you know, there are consequences to some of these actions.
Maybe Theon won't want to turn Malcolm over, like, to hurt him or something, because he's her dad. And that's the only real family she has left besides Oliver.
Although, at the end of the last episode, she looked at him and said, I'll be your student, I'll be your partner, I'll be your soldier, but I'm never again going to be your daughter. And she walks away. And she's basically said, that's it. You know, no more. So, I would say that's a significant step toward her, you know, turning completely away from Malcolm and joining Team Arrow. You know, especially after the episode that we got a couple of weeks ago, where everybody, I mean, we had to make sure that everybody remembered her nickname was Speedy. Remember, because everybody called her Speedy. It was the entire hour, it was like the Speedy Hour, because even Amanda Waller at one point reminded people, oh yeah, what about your sister? What is it you call her? Speedy? I'm like, let's hit everybody over the head with this, shall we, writers? I think they're telegraphing that.
So you think by the end of the season she'll be in a mask? I think that's a fair assumption.
I think she's going to be Speedy. Well, see, because she's already got the skills.
Yeah.
And we saw with the fight against Slade on the island that she and Ollie can coordinate and can fight together against somebody. And there was very well done fight choreography. I wish we'd gotten more. I really think that there was a missed opportunity on this episode, because if they had not spent so much time on the flashback, they could have done the most dangerous game on the island, with Slade hunting Oliver and Thea through most of the episode. And I think that would have been a good tense hour of television that we didn't get. Instead, we got a bunch of wigs, everybody wearing a bunch of wigs to match what they look like in season one. Although we did get finally see Andy Diggle, John's brother, because everybody's been talking about him for so long, and he's dead now. But, you know, we finally get an actor playing John's brother in the episode. And we get to see Colin Donald again. Yes, great, fine. And did anybody catch the line when Thea looked at him after the drug deal, and Tommy comes over to her, and she says, it's not like you're my brother or anything. And everybody's like, yeah, I don't know. I think it was just a missed opportunity. I don't care for all the flashbacks, and I really have a hard time believing that a super secret government agency, with however many resources it has on hand and however many trained agents it has, needs Oliver Queen to do all of these things for them. I mean, he's not trained. He's not in any kind of official capacity at all.
Right.
I mean, you're putting a civilian in harm's way. Granted, he's already supposed to be dead, but at the same time, I'm wondering where all of the Argus agents are that should be doing this work that they've got Oliver Queen doing.
There's a lot of paperwork. There's just a lot of paperwork, and they don't have the time to train these people.
Plausible deniability.
Yes,
yeah, we're using a dead guy.
It's like every one mission they send him on, there's 30 guys that have to do all that paperwork.
Well, he is a disposable asset as well. If he dies, nobody cares because he's already dead. So that's an argument that you could make. However, I think the whole reason of this is to kind of really give the audience the level of villainy that Argus actually is displaying in this show. I mean, Argus is, and it's honestly a really bad mishandling of Amanda Waller's arc, as I'm concerned. I think that they're missing a real opportunity. First of all, it should be CC Pounder.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the whole point of an Amanda Waller character is to give you the monster on your side, because everything that Amanda Waller did in the comics, and this is pre-New 52, by the way, everything she did in the comics was for the greater good. And sometimes some of the things she did were horrible. And
yeah, she broke some eggs
in the comics.
Yeah.
Because she committed crimes and she got caught. And they were for the greater good, yes, but they were crimes. And so she went to prison. And, I mean, here we've got everything that we see about Argus is that it's just, we've got one good Argus agent at this point. And Diggle's married to her.
Well, and I think, too, the other thing that these flashbacks are doing at this point is setting up Katana to show up in Star City. Because, really, if you've got an actress, and I can't, I'm going blank on her name right now, but, you know, she's not somebody that just having a throwaway part. They have to be building to Katana coming in. I really think that Arrow is building to an Outsiders episode.
So instead
at least an episode, if not more significantly, because you've got Arrow, you've got Arsenal, you've got Black Canary, and she finally gets her official name. You heard Detective Captain Lance call her Black Canary this time in this hour. Pretty much the only one who doesn't have his official code name yet is Green Arrow.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing. If we don't get it between now and March, that's the first thing I'm going to ask Stephen Amell when we do our panel at Planet Comic Con. I'm going to look at him and say, okay, when is he going to be Green Arrow? Everybody else has got their names.
Uh-huh.
Why is it taking so long? You know, but you've got those guys in place. You have Wildcat. There was talk that Huntress was going to be back this season, but now she's not. She'll be back in season 4. No, wait. What season are we in now? Are we in season 4?
3.
No,
we're in season 3. Okay.
Yeah.
Season 4, we'll get Huntress back. And then you've got Katana sitting out there waiting in the wings and Speedy waiting in the wings. You've got the Outsiders. You've
well,
got some version of the Outsiders.
Where's Geo-Force?
Well, who's to say they wouldn't
well,
show
actually, up? Actually, yeah. With the introduction of the Flash and the occurrence of Powers, you could get Geo-Force. Now, I think if you get Geo-Force at all, he's going to be a one-off.
Right.
He's going to show up. In fact,
how long before we have the Outsiders
episode where they travel to Europe?
And then that becomes a new TV show on the CW.
Yeah, it could very well be.
They have Arrow and the Outsiders.
Well, because they've got a bunch of there it is. After 5 years, they run out of space
for
flashbacks.
It's now Arrow and the Outsiders.
Yeah, that could be the time jump.
Yeah.
So then they can do flashbacks for everybody else that's in the Outsiders. But you know, you've got the Atom, you've got Wildcat, and we still haven't seen very much of Ted Grant. So you know, that's one of those things where there is potential for story there. And I think it was Guggenheim was saying that now that we've had the Flash Arrow crossover, and we have some powers that have shown up in Arrow, they sat there and said, "Yeah, we can do this. We can put powers in Arrow." Mm-hmm. So I think from here out, moving forward, we're going to see a significant jump in metahumans showing up on Arrow. It's not going to be a dominant thing, but the door's been kicked open now that the producers sit there and go, "It, we can still make it work within the realm of the whole grounded, realistic, you know, dark and gritty Batman-esque Arrow. We can still have powers here." So, yeah, I wouldn't put it past them to bring in maybe Grodd crosses over at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's the next Arrow Flash crossover is dealing with Grodd.
Maybe Grodd builds a nuclear reactor in Star City and it blows up and then metahumans.
Can I just say the fact that we are talking about Grodd being a character?
Oh, I know.
And we've had that moment at the end of the Flash where we see him and hear him and there's a voice in the head. And we all sat there and just everyone sat there and went, yes! With the full realization that we're talking about a TV show which is going to have a telepathic, hyper-intelligent gorilla as a villain.
And we've known this since the pilot. Yeah, we've known this since the pilot. Like, we were just like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Can't believe they're doing it, but yeah, sure.
Well, I think one of the things that everybody was concerned about was the CG. I think that was the big thing, is like, how are they going to do Grodd on a TV budget?
Mm-hmm.
And
the answer is pretty well.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're not using him as much. Whenever you see him, they're very brief glimpses. It's fast, quick, boom, done, in and out.
And then you see it more from a wide perspective where it's cheaper.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes here.
And also keep in mind, as far as like CGI, a lot of the money goes into the development of it.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have it, which obviously we have from the Planet of the Apes movies, it becomes cheaper because they've developed softwares to make it faster and blah, blah, blah. And it's creating new things. You know, it's like it took them forever to make the first Transformers movie. It did not take ILM as long to recreate it.
Right.
You know.
Well, and you look at the Firestorm effects.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they put money into the beginning of it, you know, and they use Flash budget to develop the Firestorm effects. So now when they do the Firestorm series, they don't have to do all of that significant development. Yeah. So they're going to be able to do a pilot, an official first episode, much cheaper than they would if they had to make all of that stuff
money
up from scratch.
Elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what they're doing with Grodd too.
Well, and they've also been very, very smart in how they've spent their effects money. They have recognized what they have to spend it on. And when you're making a show about a guy who can, you know, run incredibly fast, obviously you have to spend money on that effect. And so they clearly thought about this stuff well in advance before hitting the air.
Yeah.
That how this stuff was going to look and how it was going to be doable on a TV budget, on a CW TV budget. And so, you know, if nothing else, even if the show, you know, somehow does jump the shark and turn into a mess, you know, it could be looked at as a production team that actually understood how they were going to have to spend their money to make a very special effects heavy show.
I'm not sure that Flash is likely to jump the shark as Arrow is at this point.
Arrow's,
I could be wrong. I think
right
Arrow's
on the cusp.
Arrow's close.
And that's just, I mean, that's just showing its, you know, showing its age.
Yeah.
At three seasons. You know, it's like, with Smallville. You had some crap stories
in
there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, just because they're like, oh, this is the only show with hitting your rating.
They were only willing to go so far in taking the character to its logical conclusion.
Right.
There's only so many Superboy stories that you can tell before your characters age out of Superboy and turn into Superman. You can't get around that.
You got to put on the cape at some point.
Yeah, the problem with Smallville, though, is not necessarily they weren't allowed to.
Yeah.
Right, but here with Arrow, I think the only way that they are in danger of really jumping the shark is giving us another entire season of flashbacks when really most of us just want them to tell their story. Go ahead and tell Green Arrow's story. Get into the Green Arrow.
Those stories.
Team be the team or whatever it is, but don't.
And maybe they are building a universe here. I don't know. You know. It's,
well, I think they are building a universe, but I also think that at some point your flashbacks become counterproductive. You know, and I know that they've said that they're going to do the flashbacks all the time, but at some point you don't necessarily need them. Because, you know, he was on the island for 5 years. We're getting close. By the time we get to season 5, we're going to be flashbacking into season 1.
Yeah.
And we just saw that with this last episode. Basically, we're doing a flashback into that same year. that Ollie died, you know, pilot season and all that. And it's one of those things where there was a lot of fan service in this episode, and I think that's what your flashbacks to season one would be at that point. You don't necessarily have to have a flashback in every single episode. I think you can change the format at some point, and fans would be okay with it. Because we're starting to see some people that are going, okay, enough already with the flashbacks. Just tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this last episode especially, you know, the scene with Felicity coming into the office and dropping off the file, and that was just to have Felicity in the episode. There was no reason for her to be there other than, you know, camera shot of her legs and she gets a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fan service. That's not story service. You know, same with Diggle doing security at Tommy's party. You know, that's fan service. There's no story reason for him to have to be there, yeah, other than his brother got him a job doing security at a party. Yeah. I don't know. I think at some point the flashbacks are going to get overbearing, and they're gonna have a negative impact on the rest of the story, because there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, let's talk Aquaman for a second.
Speaking of fan service, let's talk about Aquaman.
The picture that Zack
first
Snyder.
First question I have.
Yeah.
The first question I have is: Have you seen the color corrected version of the photo?
No, have not.
The fan color corrected.
There's a guy who sat there and took the picture, and he just adjusted the saturation. It's a desaturated image. He just reversed it.
Okay.
And there's a lot of yellow. There's a lot of gold and green, and it's pretty much Aquaman's colors. Less, not so much the orange, but more of a gold.
Uh huh.
And the saturated version actually looks pretty good. The question becomes, what's it going to look like on the screen? Because, you know, they changed the Superman costume for this movie, which is much brighter. But what's it going to look like on the screen? I mean, we got, you know, all the production photos we've seen have been so desaturated and grim.
Yeah. This is a very bleak universe that the DC heroes live in, and it's kind of...
Is that why Aquaman can't have blonde hair?
Because it's not bleak enough, Jeff. It's not bleak enough. Blondes are not bleak. Blondes have more fun.
I don't care about the blonde hair. The blonde hair doesn't bother me at all. I really don't care.
Unite the Seven. Who is the Seven?
I think it looks good. Honestly, I think it looks good. For the production design,
for the universe that they're building, for Zack Snyder's universe that he's building, I think he'll fit right in.
Well, now
no comments on
this Unite the Seven thing.
Who are the Seven?
Well, the Heat Vision blog is talking about it, and something that I didn't even think about was the Seven Seas. A reference to the Seven Seas as opposed to the seven founding members of the Justice League.
Oh.
So the question then becomes, okay,
that's going to really suck.
Is yeah, but
it makes sense, but
then
thanks
that,
for getting my
that
hopes
opens
up.
That opens up two story possibilities. Either it's Aquaman uniting the oceans and, you know, King of Atlantis and all that against Superman and the rest of the Justice League. Or Aquaman somehow plays a significant role in bringing all of the heroes together to form the Justice League.
He is the Martian Manhunter. Like, instead of having Martian Manhunter, he's playing the Martian Manhunter part of bringing
them
together.
He's either the Martian Manhunter, or he's the common enemy they all have to fight and realize, oh, we're actually friends. You know, it's one of those things because, you know, the heroes must fight before their buddies. Which
Jason and I have talked about this on H2O, where we the logical thing storytelling wise, and of course it doesn't mean that's what's going to happen, but the logical thing storytelling wise is to give us Batman and Superman doing their thing, Wonder Woman comes in towards the tail end, And in the final few minutes, we get the big dramatic reveal of the other members of the Justice League against some giant threat. Well, realistically, if you want to play it that way, you could have Aquaman be the giant threat to some degree, be the, you know, Atlantis invades.
Right, because of what happened in the Indian Ocean.
And then your third move, your next movie is, you know, the realization that we're all on the same side and whatever, and go on from there. That, you know, again, from a story, from a logical storytelling standpoint, that could actually be pretty effective. But, you know, at this point, there is so much speculation about the plot of this movie, and we don't have any information about how many of these characters we're starting to see are going to fit into this story at all.
Well, the only thing that I don't like from a story standpoint is I really don't like this whole, first of all, I don't like the Batman versus Superman thing, and I don't like the, I also don't like that Batman is older. I also don't like the, I don't like using one of your heroes as a common enemy. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that actually, what Jason is saying actually makes a ton of sense, you know, because of what happened in the ocean at the end of Superman and blah, 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 that pisses him off and blah, you know, just brings in all this stuff. Like, that makes sense. I just don't like it. And nobody says that they have to, you know, they don't have to bow to my will or anything. But, if so, can I be referred to as Zod? That'd be awesome. You all must bow before me. But anyway, I really don't think that, I don't like that idea, but it does make sense story-wise that I don't understand why they have to fight to come together. You know, I mean, I don't understand why they all have to start off as enemies. You know, why Batman and Superman have to start off as feuding?
Because that's the way you do it.
Well, but this is something else that we talked about with that Jason and I have talked about a number of times, is that again, in terms of logical storytelling, you have a Batman who looks at the destruction of Metropolis and doesn't trust Superman.
Yeah,
and
that makes sense.
If you are going to go anywhere near what needs to happen, in my opinion, for this story, for if you're going to build this universe the right way, is you have the confrontation is Batman. Basically, it all boils down to Batman basically saying, "You're responsible for all these deaths," and Superman saying, "I know, and it's never going to happen again." And if that's what it has to build to, that's at the core. That's every bit of your confrontation right there. Everything else is, you know, dressing. If you don't have that, the universe doesn't work. It just doesn't, because your Superman is wrong.
Right.
You either have to address that fact or you're screwed.
We had a sort of flashpoint thing going on where Aquaman and Wonder Woman were fighting each other and Batman and Superman had to team up to stop them from destroying the Earth.
I hadn't considered that, but that's a possibility.
We know they're both in the show, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it could be because they just finished shooting in New Mexico here not too long ago. And we know that Wonder Woman, the solo film, is going to start shooting probably in the fall. So maybe there is something to that where the impact on the oceans, because Themyscira is an island, that's out in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, right.
Maybe there's something to that. I hadn't thought about that. But you still have
Aquaman and Wonder Woman team up, and they're mad at humanity for causing all this trouble in the ocean.
Well,
how about this? You have Aquaman and Wonder Woman dealing with their individual worlds dealing with the after effects of Man of Steel. And they come basically to confront Superman too, and then you've got Batman standing in between the two of them, going, "Hang on, I just had this conversation." And they say, "Who are you?" And he goes, "I'm Batman."
Does anyone else have a problem with them kind of being... Well, first of all, if this is an older Batman, Batman has existed in this universe for a while.
Yes, he has.
So this is the coming out party.
Been king for a while, too.
But that doesn't necessarily... Yeah, he could have been king of Atlantis for a while. That doesn't necessarily mean he's in the public consciousness. Same with Wonder Woman.
Right.
Superman has just arrived. The problem that I have with all this stuff you guys are saying is... Why are we making Superman the little boy in all of this? You know what I mean? Like he's the little boy,
right?
They're all old and smart. We're the adults. Superman, you're bad. You're bad, Superman. You could destroy us all in a second.
Superman is bad.
But you know what? I think in many and this is the part that scares me because it does come down to writing, and it does come down to story. But
and we know who's in charge of it.
In some ways, he is the most powerful one.
Yeah.
There's not in some ways.
It's not one of those things.
He should be the Boy Scout, and in some respects, that does make him the younger one and the more innocent one. And there should be something about Superman that has that, and not in a negative, blind kind of way, but in a certain amount of innocence and good nature. And if we don't get that, if we don't have that sense from the character. Again, we're coming back to a really, really shaky foundation for this universe. An older Batman doesn't bother me because you've got Batman, you know, his whole point in the comics for a long time was to be taken as an urban myth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's real, oh my God, he's real. So I have a problem with that. And I don't, so that stuff can all be kind of, you know, under the radar. But also the fact that I want somebody who's going to be not necessarily a father figure, but someone who's an authority figure to have that conversation with Superman after the first film.
Well,
because
and even
I need to have that authority figure say, look at what you've done, and for that and for Superman to sit there and say, I know.
Well, even with them being the same age, we've had those conversations where Batman is the authority figure within the Justice League, even. I mean, he's the one that's always taking charge, and you even have some of the other ones, in an established universe, in terms of personalities, I think it's easy for Batman to fill that role just because of the way the character has historically been written. I think it's going to be easier for them to do that now, and especially now that he's older. That's going to be consistent with how he's been portrayed in the comics before. But I think you're right. I think you do need to have that one. You've got to have at least that one scene where Kal-El gets taken to task about everything that's happened. And... You know, who knows how this is all going to play out? Because if you're still talking about 7, we still have yet to get any word that we're going to have the Flash or Green Lantern in this, because they would be the other two. Now, we know Ezra Miller is going to play the Flash in the solo film, but we don't know.
We also know that there's a Shazam movie coming out.
Right.
So is Billy Batson going to be introduced?
Yeah, well... I think there's less chance of Shazam crossing over because that movie is going to be done by New Line, which, granted, it's all part of the same cinematic universe, according to Dwayne Johnson. But I think there's less likelihood of Shazam showing up in a Superman movie than you would with Flash and Green Lantern, because your founding members of the Justice League don't include Shazam.
No.
Or Captain Marvel. I refuse to refer to him as Shazam. He's not Shazam. Shazam is the wizard. but the this
and
this
that was
notion,
an acronym.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I still remember the opening for the old TV series on CBS.
I don't remember it at all.
It was.
I do.
You know, they list all of the names of the people. You know, Solomon, Atlas, Hercules. You know, and I think it's. This whole Unite the Seven thing, it's deliberately vague. So we don't know if he's uniting the seven seas against humanity, or if he's the critical piece in uniting the Justice League that leads into Justice League Part 1. It's going to be interesting. Because if they do bring in Flash and Green Lantern, which ones?
Right.
Are we going to get Barry Allen or Wally West? Are we going to get Hal Jordan or Guy Gardner or John Stewart or Kyle Rayner? Which Green Lantern are we going to get? I would say we're going to get John Stewart.
We're going to get John Stewart.
I would guess John Stewart.
Yeah, I would say so. And Ezra Miller is probably going to be Barry Allen.
Oh, I would, because they're doing a solo Flash movie with Ezra Miller.
Right. Yeah, he has officially been cast, but he's been cast as the Flash. Mm-hmm. He's not been cast as
Wally West,
Barry Allen or Wally West. So they have that wiggle room there. And speaking of the Flash, let me jump back to the Flash for a second, because something bothers me about the show. Out of all of the goodness that is this first season, the fact that they brought in Linda Park as a romantic interest for Barry Allen bothers me no end. Because Linda Park married Wally West. Linda Park is part of the Wally West Flash continuity. She is not part of
and
Barry
that's a
Allen.
Big
it's a huge thing.
Of the Wally West continuity.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's
in the old
52. Here's what's going to happen there is that a few years are going to go by because that relationship's not going to last and he's going to end up with Iris. And a couple seasons are going to go by, maybe season 3, and we're going to get Wally West. And then we're going to bring Linda Park back, probably recast as someone who's a little bit younger.
Well, they've already recast her once.
Do it again.
But how are you going to bring back
an actress, and she's just going to be a slightly older woman?
Yeah, but how are you going to introduce Wally West? Because we don't even have any establishment at all that Iris has a brother.
Cousin, maybe.
It'll be
Wally West is Barry Allen's nephew.
It'll be a cousin or a nephew or it'll be a cousin.
I don't know.
Because Grant Gustin is a child.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing about it is though, if you have any plans for Wally West at any point in the future. Now, maybe it's a time travel thing. Maybe Wally West shows up and coming back from the future or something as the next Flash. Who knows? But even if you do, you still don't have the foundation laid from a family standpoint because, you know, we don't have anything in the show to indicate that there's another West because right. Wally West is a nephew. And unless they do a serious departure from that story, which a lot of fans would be upset with, somehow Iris needs to have a brother. And we haven't mentioned the brother yet. There's no talk of a brother. Nobody knows anything about a brother.
You would think it would have come up by now.
Yeah, you think.
Especially, and also when you consider how much younger Wally West was supposed to be.
Right.
He would still be living at home.
Well, you could play with that too, and have Iris's brother be significantly older. Because in my own family, my mother, her two older brothers are 21 and 18 years older than she is. She's the baby of the family, and her sister is 11 years older. So there is a huge spread among the brothers and sisters of my mom's family.
It could be a previous marriage. It could be a number of things. But the show has already massively departed.
Yeah,
from the comic book origin.
Oh,
Barry Allen is in his late 20s, early 30s in the comics when he first appears. He is he develops the suit himself. It fits inside a ring. He has no team. I mean, the show has massively departed from the source material. They're in their own universe. They can do whatever they like.
Right.
Now,
and so I think...
What, Jeff?
Trying to...
Now Barry's my age in the show.
Well...
Yeah, there's the expectation that they are going to hew even remotely close to... We've killed off Simon Stagg. We may have killed off General Eiling already.
I don't think Eiling's dead. I don't think Eiling's dead.
I think he's still
around. But I think I just figured it out. I think I just figured it out. I think I know where Wally West is going to come from. I think that Joe is going to get mixed up with Sherry, like the drink. you know, Chase Masterson's character that showed up in that one episode, the cougar that now owns the old Allen house.
Uh-huh. Gotcha.
And really, where the episode where Joe has a key to the house and they just walk in, where is she? You know, she at least acknowledged that they're there. But, you know, the way she was making eyes at him, and Sisko, of course, is like, I'm not going to judge, you know, whatever. That was a fun bit. And so now we have Joe and Sherry hook up, and Iris gets a half-brother.
Yeah, but I mean, how long is this show going to go on?
Oh, I know.
In order to introduce a 14-year-old Wally West.
But I think with the addition of Crisis on Infinite Earths that we saw in the very first episode, and now we've got significant steps toward the whole time travel thing, that's it's going to be a lot easier. Happen. You could bring in a Wally West Flash
from an Earth 5,
or from the future.
Yeah.
To warn Barry about something.
He could be a time traveler.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
okay, speaking of time, we're out. What, Tim?
So basically, he could be your Bart Allen analog.
Yeah, he could be Bart. He could be the analog of that.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, well, that's going to do it for us in this hour. If you have theories or you have opinions or whatnot regarding any of the DC filmed media, you are welcome to leave us a comment or send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com, and let us know what you think. And in the meantime, share this show with your friends. If you've got people that are interested in the DC universe at all, and you think they might enjoy this program, we would appreciate a little bit of brand ambassadorship from you out there in the audience. We do appreciate you listening every month. And that's going to do it for us. In the meantime, you can check out all of the latest news headlines over at scififorme.com. You can get us on to the social media or on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Google+, YouTube, Pinterest. And, of course, the podcasts are available through iTunes and DoubleTwist and OneCast, Stitcher, and the RSS feed that you can find over at our main site, which is scififorme.com. Jeff Hackworth, Tim Harvey, Kendall Sin. For all of us here at Sci-Fi for Me Radio, Jason Hunt here, thanking you for joining us, and we will be back on another Rogues Gallery next month.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.